Welcome back to the Daily Drum on WHUR, Sirius XM channel 141, 96.3 HD2 and 98.3 FM. This is the Insight segment. I'm Harold Fisher.
When you saw the significant collapse of the Afghan troops we had trained, up to 300,000 of them, just leaving their equipment and taking off. That was, you know, that's what happened.
Speaking to ABC News, President Joe Biden was asked if the U.S. exit could have been handled better in any way from Afghanistan. He said no, but added, we're going to go back in hindsight and look. The president insisted he made the right decision to pull the troops out, but sidestepped a question regarding planning and U.S. intelligence failures. Afghanistan is by far America's longest war, 20 years from 2001 to 2021. What started as a response to 9/11 evolved into what? Well, that depends on who you ask. Now we are in a political crisis. Joining me to talk about this are Mark Fisher, senior editor at the Washington Post, and Ravi Perry, chair of the Political Science Department here at Howard University. Lines are open. Give us a call. I want to hear what you have to say about what's happening in Afghanistan at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. You can tweet me at HFisher, WHUR, or find me on Instagram at Harold T. Fisher. Mark, thanks for joining the conversation.
Great to be with you.
And Ravi, also great to have you on the program.
Great to be with you again.
So before we even get into Afghanistan, I have to get a quick comment from both of you on the developments on Capitol Hill today. The Floyd Roseberry situation, this five-hour standoff at the Library of Congress, this bomb scare that was just a scare. U.S. Capitol Police saying they found bomb-making material, but no bomb. The North Carolina man, the reports are from the press conference today that he recently lost his mother, but he was also ranting about Joe Biden and the results of the 2020 election. It seems, Mark, that this 2020 election situation just is not going away, and there are just people who are apparently doing whatever they can to voice their displeasure, even in extreme methods.
That's exactly right, Harold. And I think what we're seeing is that we're all traumatized in a way. And so what would ordinarily have been a bomb scare that most news organizations would barely report on became almost a national crisis because everyone's on edge, because for good reason, after the January 6th insurrection. And so we are kind of always expecting the worst and expecting that when the worst comes, it will be in the form of something reflecting this deep political divide, deep cultural divide in our country. And so when this guy, who apparently has some history of mental disturbance, comes along, the language he uses, the rhetoric he uses, is all about this political divide. It's all about the rhetoric that he hears on right-wing media about a rigged election and all of that. And so it all gets funneled and channeled into those tropes, those terms that we've heard so much since Trump went on about with his phony story of a rigged election.
You know, Ravi, nobody hurt today. I think that's the good thing. I think the only people who were hurt were people who were trying to go somewhere downtown today, and certainly that is a pain. But I think this speaks to, as Mark just said, just a larger issue where this 2020 election and the people who are not happy with it, it just won't go away.
Yeah, you know, this is the consequence of the Trump era of disinformation, where we just aren't dealing with partisan divide. We just aren't dealing with, you know, people who disagree with Joe Biden. We're dealing with a largely undereducated population that have been deliberately undereducated as a result of the demise of public education under the control of many GOP state legislatures and state board of education members appointed by governors throughout the country. And we also are dealing with this massive still result from the Trump era of significant misinformation and disinformation. People genuinely don't know what they don't know. And what they don't know is being fueled by certain media sources that seek to exploit these individuals using their ignorance to tell them falsehoods that there's some ugly other out there that's trying to take away their jobs, take away their freedoms, take away their guns. And this is really a, you know, part of the dangerous culture that the Trump era and the Republican Party has been complicit in for many, many years. And sadly, I just don't see this ending anytime soon.
Speaking of education, and I'll start with Mark. Let's go back, Mark. 20 years ago, there is an entire generation that is probably looking at what we are seeing now happening in Afghanistan and saying, why are we there? Because they don't know. If you are under the age of 25 years old, you may not have any idea why we are in Afghanistan. Can you give me the 9/11 101 Osama bin Laden bit about what Afghanistan has to do with right now?
Yeah, I mean, you don't have to be a 25-year-old. You could be any age at all, and you'd be totally justified in having lost the thread of where this all came from and where it was all supposed to go, because for 20 years we've had a war that, in starts and fits, went nowhere and ended up pretty much where it started. This was all a result of after 9/11, when it was clear that the Al-Qaeda terrorist network was behind the attacks in New York and Washington. The United States went off to try to hold people accountable. And the people who were accountable, the Al-Qaeda operatives, had been given free rein and refuge in the mountains of Afghanistan by the Taliban, by the regime that was there then, and taking advantage of the disarray in that country that has suffered from civil war for many decades. And so the United States went after the Al-Qaeda folks in Afghanistan with a massive military movement, and there we got stuck. Eventually Osama bin Laden was killed. Eventually many of the people involved in the conspiracy to take down the World Trade Center were caught, captured. Some were held to account. Some remain in Cuba. Some have been returned to their home countries. But beyond that, the whole mission morphed into a democracy-building effort of some sort in Afghanistan. And for the hundreds of thousands of Americans who served in one duty term after another in Afghanistan, it was often never clear to them why they were there. What was the mission? What would constitute victory? What would constitute permission to go home? And this went on through four presidents, two Democrats and two Republicans. It went on, and three of those presidents swore that they would get every last American out of there. And it just never happened until now.
Indeed so. 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. We're talking about America's longest war, Afghanistan, now a political crisis. What do you think about what is happening right now? If you have a comment or a question, give us a call at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Robbie, to Mark's point, President Obama said when he was campaigning, he's going to end this war. President Trump said he was going to end this war. He was going to pull the troops out. That didn't happen. President Biden spoke about the same. He did it. Do you believe that no matter who was in charge at the White House, who was president, no matter when this happened, that what we are seeing now would have happened under any administration?
Oh, absolutely, it would have. And I think it's important for us to really think about and listen to what the president and all the military leaders have said. What they've said is that they didn't expect this to happen so soon, which is another way of saying they did expect it to happen. So I think the issue here is that America cut its losses. We realized that the mission got befuddled, that the effort to try to hunker down those who are responsible for 9/11 and who are allegedly being harbored throughout places and caves and et cetera throughout Afghanistan. After we secured much of that apparatus of Al-Qaeda and the Taliban and dismantled them, we stayed because apparently some prior presidents felt somewhat responsible for the country, and they tried to create, as Mark was saying, this kind of democratization project, which is always a disaster when America decides to go into another country and essentially, you know, impose upon them the American Western philosophical kind of democratic values that simply just is not germane to that country.
Do we, to that particular point, today's Taliban, the Mujahideen, when they were fighting the Russians, Mark?
It's not. They're not exactly the same, but they come from a very similar Islamist background. They have a very similar vision of what life in Afghanistan should be, and that is, as the Taliban has now admitted in recent hours, a country run under Sharia law, and so a very different vision from what the United States has helped to foster over the last 20 years, where millions of girls and women in Afghanistan are in schools and universities, in professional jobs, in all kinds of jobs. That is something that we can now expect to be rolled back to what it was under the Mujahideen, those so-called freedom fighters who America once supported when they were fighting against the Soviet Union, but who became kind of an enemy when we were looking at this through the prism of international terrorism.
And to that point, if nothing else, they are just as tenacious, if not more, as the Mujahideen, was against the Soviet Union. And I would argue, and I don't know why, you know, the communications PR machine for the Biden administration has not said this, that, you know, the Taliban has been laying in wait for 21 years for this to happen, because whether it was going to happen this fast or happen gradually, this is not America. This is not an American ally. This is their country. And for lack of a better term, eventually, 10 years, 15, 20 years, I guess they knew that America was going to leave. Ravi.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, and we also kind of made it clear to them that they would leave. So the effort of the Taliban to try to persuade the world that they are somehow different than they were 20 years ago, certainly the United States has viewed the Taliban as a terrorist group, but many in the Middle East view these types of groups not as the way the United States does. Many instances, they not only in Afghanistan, but affiliates in places like Lebanon and Jordan, et cetera, they provide food and clothing and shelter for families. And that, you know, creates a real difficult relationship between what the American media projects and what they, in fact, are also perhaps doing in some of their enclaves. And we, of course, are interested in our American interest. And our American interest in Afghanistan is not democratization. At least it should not have been, because that we knew that was going to be a failed project. You can't plop in the middle of the Middle East and then think that a country that borders China and et cetera is going to suddenly, you know, fall to the whim of American auspices. That would have been a foolish proposition to begin with. But our interests are tied to the region and, of course, to having found the culprits who led the effort of 9/11. And we did that. And so the challenge is, no president, I think, wanted to experience what President Biden is experiencing now, which is getting a lot of blowback from both sides of the aisle. including his own people, about the rollout of this effort. Not so much the decision itself, but the rollout. And, you know, Americans, you know, we believe in this false notion of exceptionalism. And so the idea that, you know, some people who went there for 20 years, tour after tour after tour, you know, they see Afghanistan falling and they, you know, may feel as though their time there was wasted. But, you know, that I think is likely correlated with conservative interest and a Republican Party's partisanship. But nonetheless, I think just about every American agrees, and every American president that's living agrees, that getting out of Afghanistan was the right thing to do.
202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. We are talking about Afghanistan and the American political crisis. We have Keith from D.C. Keith, I need you to hang on because we are going to talk to you. Before the break, I wanted Mark to have one final comment before we lose him. Your thoughts on what is next? There was that press conference today at the Pentagon where the officials don't quite know how much longer they're going to stay. They could stay beyond August 31st. They don't know how many Americans are there. They don't seem to really have a concrete plan of how to get out.
Yeah, there's a lot of scrambling going on, both political and military, and it does seem that the Biden administration really hadn't planned through exactly who would be getting out, how they would be getting out, how we would extricate ourselves from that country other than the troop withdrawal. What about the people who work for all the nonprofits, the NGOs in Afghanistan, the human rights workers, the aid workers? What about the journalists and the translators and other Afghan nationals who help American companies? And so that clearly was not a plan that was well developed, and now Biden is suffering in the polling on that question. We're seeing a significant drop in his support from both Democrats and Republicans on his handling of foreign policy, and specifically on how he arranged this withdrawal. But as Professor Perry said, the base support for the main decision, which is to pull out of Afghanistan, that remains there. So that gives a lot of Biden's people a sense of confidence that in the long run, he's not going to suffer terribly from this rather messy exit.
Mark Fisher, Washington Post, thank you so much. I appreciate your time. Thank you so
thank
much.
You.
We're going to take a break, but don't forget, you can hear every edition of the Daily Drum Insight segment via podcast on WHUR.com. Download the 96.3 HD2 app on your smartphone and hear the program live in its entirety. John Mons is next with the original Quiet Storm on WHUR. I'm Harold Fisher. We'll be back in a few seconds. Welcome back to the Daily Drum on SiriusXM Channel 141. I'm Harold Fisher. We continue our conversation about Afghanistan, America's longest war, now a American political crisis. We have Ravi Perry, chair of the Political Science Department at Howard University, and of course you, our listeners, at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. If you have a comment, if you have a question, give us a call. We will take your comments or questions. Definitely want to hear what you have to say. Let me start with, and you're going to have to help me with this. I believe this is Joshua. Joshua, yes. Thank you so much. What's on your mind?
Hey, Harold. Good evening. Nothing much to say that I am an immigrant myself from to this country from Africa. I was a victim of war and scared just what you see is happening in Afghanistan. We have peacekeeping force. In my country where I was, in Liberia. But one thing I want to say is, like, we all are now supporting and praying and hoping that the U.S. troops, you know, get to come back home. And we just have to rally around instead of being so much hate towards partisan. You know, this party said this is right, this party said this is wrong. We have our soldiers, Marines, and whoever are over there. We should be putting together, rallying around, and making sure however we can get those people out of there as soon as possible instead of us playing politics. And that's the problem with us right now. Politics is hurting our religious view, hurting our families. Politics is doing danger in this place. And as an immigrant in this country, it is great to have democracy, free speech, and what have you, but unity rather is what matters right now from what I see. Thank you very much.
You know, Joshua, I got to say that is a really flat-footed and plain-spoken, clear-eyed opinion, because you know, you remember when the troops came home from Vietnam and the long-term effects of PTSD and how so many of those veterans really, really suffered. And we can talk about the politics of Vietnam and you know, how America fared or did not fare when that war ended. But it was the, you know, the veterans who suffered immensely, and indeed in many cases, some of them still to this very day suffer because of their experiences. And I think, you know, you make such an excellent point. So thank you for that. Let's go to Jackson, calling from Pittsburgh. Jackson, thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
What's on my mind is that the horrific scene that we've seen on TV, I think it's definitely sad for the people of Afghanistan. But, you know, the United States have to try to get themselves together, because they war for 20 years and they really didn't know what they were doing. And I say this in the sense of the fact of the results that you have. You have a whole culture that's been developed for so many years and you expect it to change in 20 years or 3 years, and it doesn't happen. I commend you for that. So the war had to end. We had to bring our soldiers home. I didn't like the way it had been done. I think it could have been done a little more time, getting out those who have helped us, things of that sort. I'm hoping at this point that we will be able to do so with the increase in the security that we need at the airport and start moving out. But people have to realize, unfortunately, not many wars end in such a way that people in that particular country are fighting over the new government and just smoothly. They really don't. It took a while. If you even look at World War II, it took a bit keeping people in place before those things were really moving, and we were totally beat the Germans and Italy, the other forces. So it's just something that we had to get out. But one, the way it was done, I think it could have been done better. But we're still going to have that. It's still going to be, it wasn't going to be beautifully done in the sense of everyone smiling and happy. No, you're going to, I agree, you're going to have some trauma, but it's just, it could be done better.
Jackson, thank you so much for your thought on that. Ravi, was there a better way?
No. There was no better way. 20 years is way too long for us to be quote unquote occupying another country or world. And there was no really better way to get out of it. It was clear that the Taliban was taking over small cities, and then, you know, we're getting closer to the capital. We knew that. We've known that for months, which is why, again, I keep going back to, if we really listen critically, the president said that we just didn't expect this to happen so soon. But we knew it was going to happen, because when you go into another country, you quote unquote occupy it, and you are the shield that allows their government to run itself. Well, of course, when you then pull out, that any adversaries are then going to try to take control. And because the Taliban has been effective at having a monopoly of power, in Afghanistan, of course, using brutal violence and in order to achieve that goal, you know, we knew that this was going to happen. And so there was no better way. You could have kind of drawn it out longer. You could have made perhaps the American public feel slightly better about the drawdown by taking more time. But ultimately, that also would have risked more American lives as the Taliban got increasingly hold of more cities. And so in terms of American interest, in terms of American lives, there's no way other than to get out and get out now.
202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. We are talking about the political crisis, the American political crisis in Afghanistan, the pullout that has been, in a word, messy and continues to be. What do you think about it? Give us a call, 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Let us talk about this cultural issue. And I think you touched on this earlier in the conversation. And I think that we need to put a fine point on this. When you talk about Sharia law, I'm not an expert on Sharia law. As a matter of fact, I know nothing about it. But I will say that based on, you know, some of the news reports, and we talk about what we've seen and how the Taliban has reversed the strides that women have made in the country since the occupation of the U.S. And this is the point that I want to make. Looking at the education of women over the past, the attempt, I should say, to educate women, to allow them independence and freedom, looking at it through the eyes of American culture, it that's what we would do. That's what we do here. And to see what they are starting to do there now, and all of these discussions about the regression of women's rights education, you know, the shutting of beauty parlors, and you know, and all of that. And as distasteful as it may be to our American eyes, you know, it is, you know, their culture. How do we balance that? Because I cringe as an American, as a what I would consider a progressive thinking man. And I see them shutting down schools where women were being educated and where women were allowed to speak their minds and to allow themselves to, you know, enhance, you know, their themselves, you know, to beautify themselves. And now all of that appears to be shutting down. But how do we balance that with them saying that this is what we do and this is who we are?
Well, we were, I think we have to remember what we were there to do, and we weren't there to liberate women. That became a project. We were there to make good on our promise to the American people that we would hunt down those people responsible for killing 3,000 Americans in Pennsylvania, New York, and Washington, D.C. on that horrible day of 9/11. And the projects that we engaged in afterward, whether with coalition partners or on our own, I think are certainly worthy endeavors. But there's no reason why we should have expected, after 20 years, for that stuff to stay in place. I mean, on one hand, the problem that America seems to have is that they tend to think that we can go into other countries and over time kind of assuage them to adopt our values. And if we're honest, every time we've tried to do that, we've failed. Every single time. And the reason is because we have this audaciousness about us, this faux exceptionalism about us, that makes us believe that our culture, our American identity, ought to be spread around the rest of the world. And so think about if someone else came into our country, occupied our country, changed our values, and then up and left, of course we would then try to regroup and take back control of our own country. That is a normal nationhood kind of effort. And, you know, we should have never been in the business of trying to build up nations in anywhere, but certainly not in the Middle East, where we have been unsuccessful in doing so always. And so I think that the cultural argument is so important that we remember that we have to respect the cultural mores and traditions of other countries. Like you talked about, Sharia law. We are a quasi-Judeo-Christian country here, two completely different systems, two completely different gods. And so the concept that after 20 years, we should just stay there in perpetuity while we try to work on this democratic project is something that President Biden made clear that he was unwilling to do and unwilling to pass on to the next president. And I think history will show, and I think recent history will show, that he will not only survive this, but he will likely come on out on top of it, because ultimately nothing sells better than bringing American troops home.
That was my next question. Why would he survive this? Because it seems that he had the cojones, for lack of a better term, to do what his predecessors were unwilling to do. I mean, one could argue that after the killing of Osama bin Laden, within a year, President Barack Obama could have said, all right, we got Osama bin Laden, let's wrap this up. Because that's what we were supposed to do. We got our man. Let's wrap this up. It's going to be messy. It's going to be ugly. We're going to do it in a year. But I'm bringing the troops home like I said I would. Do you think that he would have had the same kind of political blowback, but eventually the same political win that you are predicting for Biden?
Well, of course, because Barack Obama is black, his blowback would have been worse based on that contention alone. And remember, Republicans tried to position themselves as the authority on national security and on foreign policy, particularly during the Obama era. And so the fact that he would use his commander-in-chief muscle at the time to bring American troops home from Afghanistan when an entire political party in this country really does in many ways orient themselves and their goals and objectives around warmongering, I think he would have suffered tremendously and likely would have never won re-election to begin with. And so I think he made the smart calculus to obviously to acknowledge the capture and the killing of Osama bin Laden as a clear victory, as he did. But for the sake of not only his presidency, but also I think for the sake of the country's understanding of where we were at that time, at that point, remember, only 7 years in from 9/11, that, you know, most Americans were still vested in trying to see if something could happen in Afghanistan, and that includes Democrats. Mm.
Need to take a break. When we come back, more on this conversation about Afghanistan. 202-319-7810. We'll be back in a moment. Welcome back to The Daily Drum on Sirius XM, Channel 141. I'm Harold Fisher. We continue our conversation about Afghanistan and American political crisis with Ravi Perry. He is the chair of the Howard University Political Science Department. Ravi, simple question, but please expand for those who may not have the ties, the intellectual interest, the political interest in this. Why should we care about what is happening now in Afghanistan, and what should we be learning from this?
That's an important question, because I think a lot of people, it's out of sight, out of mind. You know, we haven't had an attack on our homeland since 9/11. Americans simply aren't obviously familiar with that. And when we see on radio and on TV, you know, that we are invested in a whole another world away, millions and millions, if not billions of dollars, people rightfully question, like, why are we here? What are we doing? And it's important to remember, America is a global superpower. We are a key member of NATO, a key member of the United Nations. We are part of the G7, formerly G8. We are a country that has the greatest military, the best nuclear defense. And so we are relied on by other countries to help kind of keep some stability in those countries where there may be internal skirmishes. And yes, we have interest in other countries around the world, whether it be interests related to oil or natural resources, or interests that may be political in terms of geopolitical ties that we may try to broker as it relates to some of our American foreign policy goals. And so we're not just in Afghanistan. We are all over the world. We have hundreds, we have thousands of troops all over the world stationed in many countries all over the world and throughout the oceans of the world. And this is because America has vested interests, being the powerful nation that we are, in maintaining some level of world order and stability, which is why we were active in the United Nations and NATO, et cetera, to begin with. People do look to the United States of America for some measure of stability and some measure of human rights and some measure of democratic values. And so the fact that we're in Afghanistan, we may disagree with why we're there, how long we're there, what the mission is, but we cannot disagree that we have interest in that region. And for that reason, we are there and in a whole host of countries. We are stationed in every country bordering Afghanistan. And so I think, you know, we tend to get caught up on the stories that, of course, make the news. But as a global military power, we have resources and troops stationed all over the world, and we always will.
Should the Taliban, once every American possible is out, do you believe that the Taliban should or are interested in being recognized internationally as the leaders of Afghanistan, or are their interests, as President Biden suggests, only turning inward?
Well, in terms of their own life and security, they certainly have interest in some level of recognition by the world in terms of their governance structure. They, of course, have a huge challenge now of creating that and figuring out how that may work. And it seems as though that's going to be a huge challenge for them and may not and likely won't happen. But they have the power. They have the control now. So they can certainly manipulate situations to create that outcome. but the other reason why they may want to do so is because, you know, if they were to go rogue, if they were to try to isolate themselves from international world order. I mean, to be very clear, they are crystal clear. They understand that if a global coalition of United States and our allies choose to descend on Afghanistan, you know, it's all over. We don't simply obviously want to do that because we're not interested in killing civilians, et cetera, but we certainly have the power to do so. And I think the Taliban knows that, which is why they have already brokered some agreements, for example, to allow Americans to get out the country, to keep the airport relatively secure so people with American relationships and American citizenship can get out. That's all very clearly understood by the Taliban, because they know if they rifle us, then we will simply bring in the reinforcements necessary to wipe them out, which we of course can do, but it will come at a huge casualty and loss of life.
So what will happen to the Afghans? What do you see as the future of the Afghanis that are left behind? Is there going to be a civil clash, a political clash between the Taliban and the Afghanis that are left behind?
President fled the country. So many of the, you know, the Afghani kind of nationals who were engaged with America, American power, and trying to run some form of a government, they've left. I mean, the former mayor of Kabul lives here in DMV region. People have vacated the country who would be, perhaps be able to put it on the track towards some level of what America may consider normalcy. And but because those people have not just stepped down but have fled the country, it seems unlikely that those remaining will be in a position to galvanize and to create the mass mobilization that they would need to create any counteroffensive with the Taliban, certainly not without American or other coalition partners' support. So that doesn't seem to be the case right now. So I think that if anything, those Afghans that are left in the country under Taliban control, they are probably among the worst positions that they could be in any place in the planet right now.
In these final few minutes, is there a lesson in your mind for America, you know, short of another Osama bin Laden? Let us say, for the sake of argument, that there is not another person like that who is influential enough to lead an attack, and that the Taliban remains as they are, focused only on the inside of their own country. Is there a lesson for America looking back on what has transpired?
Well, I think the lesson is for America to stop trying to do nation building and to perhaps invest those resources in building up our own nation, both literally and figuratively. And if we, to the extent that we do have active engagements in other countries, that we limit that engagement to protect our interests as opposed to trying to build up our version of quote-unquote democratic values in those countries. So I think that is the clear lesson. And it unfortunately took 20 years for the country to learn that lesson, but it's not unusual. Most colonial powers, most white Eurocentric countries have often taken decades, if not centuries, to try to get rid of their conception of power over other countries. And so I'm not surprised that it took this long and took four presidents and all of that. But the lesson has got to be clear that our cultural mores cannot be easily built up in other countries, even if you're there consistently for 20 years. It just simply cannot happen without first having a clear understanding going in of what the mission is and what the culture is. And remember, we didn't go in there with that in mind. So to then turn around and say that, you know, we have, you know, this democratization goal now, it really doesn't make any sense. We did not go in there trying to understand Afghanistan. We went in there searching out people to kill them for killing us. And so the prospect of learning about Afghan history and culture was simply a afterthought. And it shows, and sadly, it took 20 years to come to the conclusion that was a failed effort. But anyone who studies cultural politics said that in 2001.
Yeah. Ravi Perry, chair of the political science department here at Howard University, thank you so much.
Thank you.
We also want to thank Mark Fisher with the Washington Post for his input earlier in the program. That is the Daily Drum for this Thursday, August 19th. I'm Harold Fisher. Good night.